Coming to you from New York's Times Square, this is Fast Money. As always, we are live at the NASDAQ market site. I'm Brian Sullivan. Welcome, everybody. Glad to have you with us tonight. Your team of traders includes Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami tonight on Fast. Tech stocks taking flight and taking the NASDAQ with them. Google, Garmin, Netflix, all at multi-year all-time highs. And guess what? We're going to be joined by the CEO of the NASDAQ for her thoughts on this record rally, their technology transformation, and everything in between. Meantime, the skyrocketing stock that has got everybody talking and trading, Convergent Galactic, keeps soaring. We're going to have answers. And later, we're breaking out the Fast Money fisticuffs. Tim and Dan are going mano a mano on FedEx. Yeah, FedEx. They're going to make their case. You decide who wins. All right, all that in the next 60 minutes. But we start with what else? Another record day on Wall Street, as the snazzy animation says. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ closing at all-time highs. The Dow up, gold up, oil up, real estate up. Guy?
Yes, sir.
What's up?
Bonds unchanged. It's sort of a repeat of what we've been talking about now for quite some time. Last night, we obviously led with Apple. What's the deal? And we talked about the price action should have been much worse. I know Karen spoke of this. Tim did as well. We talked about some of the suppliers, Corvo. We talked about Skyworks, the fact that they weren't down nearly as much as they should have been. Then you look at those stocks today, up 2%, 1.5%. Apple up big. I mean, the flows continue to come in. Bad news is discounted. Market wants to go higher. You could say the Fed has our back. I don't know what's going on, but I'll tell you something. Gold continues to rally. Newmont Mining continues to rally. That is a concern, I think, if you want to continue to take the bull thesis in the S&P 500.
Right. So the concern should be, look at the U.S. dollar up 3.5% in essentially year to date. Look at the fact that you're getting this move higher in gold. You're getting some of these, call them defensive trades. At the same time today, semiconductors, that which, you know, 2 weeks ago, were questioning whether you were actually running into global cyclicality yet again. All-time highs, up 2.5% on the SMH ETF that tracks the semiconductors. So really what we're seeing right now is this barbell trade. You're seeing people reach for one side of their buying growth. The other side of it, they're buying some of these either value industrial kind of beaten up plays or utilities REITs. That's the trade that's working. It's both sides of the ledger. With rates here and the Fed not moving, that's the dynamic.
Yeah, I would just say this, that, you know, when you think about 2019, the almost 30% gains in the S&P 500, we know a lot of that came from multiple expansions. So if you came into 2020 and you said, this is the year we get paid, we're going to get that high single digits earning growth. I think what the coronavirus tells us, no matter what you think about it, when it's going to be over and when the quarantines are going to be done and when China's factory to the world is back online, you just lost Q1 2020. That's just a fact here. So the notion that you think that we're going to see this V reversal because whether it's accommodative policy all over the place or pent-up demand, I think it's pretty lazy commentary. I see that permeating a lot of investors and a lot of financial media, and I'm just going to tell you that. So if you're going to go for 2 years where you're just going to get multiple expansion, I think that becomes pretty dicey when you see rates where they are and all those things that you just mentioned. You know, why is gold up? Why has utilities gone parabolic? Why is Bitcoin up 40% on the year? There seems to be some disconnect here, and if you look at the S&P 500 equal weight, you say to yourself, oh, I get it. It's MAGA. Right, right. Microsoft's up to 18%. Google, Amazon, and the other one, Apple. Whatever, Apple, you know, Apple. All up mid-teens or something like that. And you say to yourself, that's where we are right now. So all this other stuff that makes sense to me is acting like risk off, but then those names are just risk on.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, the VIX, which normally, like a day like today, I would have thought would have come in a lot more. It's not. It's 14.38, I think it closed. So I'd like to buy more protection because I'm always long and I'm feeling like this is getting somewhat frothy. And I was hoping the VIX would come in, but it's not. So to your point, I think that there's signs of
well, let's just go. Let's go through the numbers. I'm looking at my screen, so I'm just going to throw some numbers out.
Throw numbers
you,
out.
Here we want some
Brian.
Numbers. We're going to throw out
why
some
not?
Numbers.
Here we
go. All right.
Thursday.
The NASDAQ 100. Four stocks, Tesla, AMD, Mercado Libre, and NVIDIA, have doubled in the last 12 months. Only 17 stocks are down in that time, and about 70 stocks are up more than 20% in a year. I understand the concept of multiple expansion. I get it. But can we have multiple expansion for everybody?
I don't know. I mean, I think to look at the last year, though, I think that coming in and looking where we were February of 2019, things were really depressed. So I think that multiples should have expanded from there because they were too low.
Because that December 18 collapse.
Collapse, exactly.
So a lot of that is just kind of climbing out of that hole.
Exactly. But still, those are even when you get to out of that hole, there's still a lot of upside from
there. At what point, like a waistline and a belt that's too small, guy?
Excuse me? Why do you look at me when you say that?
I'm tapping my own stomach here.
He was going to his own middle.
At what point does the expansion get too much?
So for me, when I got to a 36 waist, I said, this is
the end of the expansion.
This expansion is over.
That's my dream.
You ran an Ironman.
Yeah.
And I got down to a 30. That's where I'm trying to stay. To answer your question, at a certain point, this passive investing is going to end miserably. And I think it's going to end, you know, stocks take the stairs up and the elevator down. That's what's going to happen. We've seen bits and drabs of it. We can talk about WeWork. If that were a publicly traded company, when it went down 80% over the course of 3 months, we talk about it every day. To think that individual stocks can't do that, I think, is foolish. But as long as the market believes the Fed has our collective back and this passive investing continues to be the rage, the market goes higher.
And this is the point with lower rates, because whether you're doing a DCF model or whether you're looking at a weighted average cost of capital for a company, the lower you push the rates, the higher the multiple goes. So as much as, and I like to point out that whether it's price to sales, whether it's EV EBITDA, whether it's PE numbers, we are back to 2000 levels. But if we're not doing it with the same rate environment that we had back then. And it's all to me about central banks and the Fed. If we had any other conversation, we wouldn't tolerate
one really quick point, though. When the 10-year Treasury breaks the 2012 and 16 low, which it will in 2020, that DCF thing may go out the window because those were generational lows in yields. And why they're breaking
and
why they're heading to 1% may be the reason why
DCF,
you don't want to own stocks.
Discounted cash flow. The banner, the graphic said, is a correction coming. Is a correction coming this year?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Of course, there's going to be a correction this year.
Okay.
How are you defining correction? Again,
10% from the highs.
Why not? Why not? Especially when you consider that we've gone up about 16% on the S&P since October 3rd. Of course, we should correct that, especially because this was a QE4 inspired rally for markets that weren't even expecting this. Yes, I think we get it.
Okay. Well, since the Nasdaq, the indexes, and the 100 hit a record high today, and since we're at the Nasdaq, kind of seems like a good idea to bring in the president and CEO of the Nasdaq. Adina Friedman joins us now. Adina, well, thanks for letting us be in your house.
The landlord. We all have names on Fast Money.
For coming on,
you're the negotiator. I'm the ambassador. She's the landlord.
Yes, you are. Thanks for having us in your house. So you guys continue to do deals, especially under your tenure. We think of the Nasdaq, first off, as CNBC and Fast Money. It's an exchange. It's a marketplace.
Indeed.
But you keep doing these deals. One report, ESG reporting, derivatives. What is the Nasdaq today?
Well, today the Nasdaq is a technology company that serves the global capital markets, including our own, but also making sure that we provide technology and services that help companies navigate the capital markets. And we provide the technology to 130 other markets around the world. So we really are enabling the capital markets around the world with our technology.
Because you're talking about a derivatives transaction today, or at least getting into a part of the derivatives market. Everybody says, oh, the Nasdaq has always had New York Stock Exchange envy. But when I see this, I think, are you going after the Chicago Mercantile Exchange?
Well, actually, what we do is we provide the technology to allow other people to go and try to compete against other incumbent exchanges or to create new markets altogether. So I believe what you're talking about is the fact that we are the technology that's underpinning a new effort by Airbus to create a derivatives market for airline ticket prices to make it so that airlines and ticketing companies, as well as the travel agencies, can hedge their risk against the highs and the lows of the airline ticket prices. So that's a new thing.
And they came to you and said, can you build this for us?
That's correct. So they came to us and said, we have this really cool idea, and we have some really great executives that know how to operate these types of exchanges, but can you be the technology partner to us to develop the trading system, make sure that we can help them connect in, as well as provide potentially post-trade and surveillance capabilities to them as well.
So that's the first. Is it the first of many to see other industries coming in and getting in on this as well? Because that is in terms of a vertical for revenue, that could be a huge market for you guys and gals.
Yeah, so we see that as a very big greenfield opportunity for us in terms of allowing other industries to think a little differently around how to maybe create more real-time pricing for their goods, hedging out their risks in terms of the underlying risk that might underpin their industry. How do you use these types of products to make it so they can hedge their risk better, as well as having some fun? So we are also a provider of technology into the sports betting arena, and that is in the more fun area where a lot of our technology is relevant in that space as well.
Let me ask you about the IPO pipeline and what you're seeing. And does it look different than where we were about a year ago this time when you had, you know, Lyft and Uber and
actually, Bing. It's so far this year, we've had more IPOs so far this year than we had in the first quarter of last year. And I think that last year we had a great year overall. We had 188 IPOs listed on NASDAQ. We had a 78% win rate in new listings, and we raised about $35 billion across the IPOs on NASDAQ. This year, we're actually getting off to a faster start. And the pipeline is just as robust, just different names, but really interesting companies coming to market.
So, Adina, talk about, you know, here we are talking about the market. A lot of people talk about 2000 and bubble-ish times. So, again, from the perspective of NASDAQ, from the perspective also not just of the IPO, but the quality of the companies that are coming through and the valuations you're seeing, you're not a trader. But you see the market in a very unique place here at the NASDAQ. How do you call what's going on right now?
Yeah, and I actually was at NASDAQ in 2000. So I can tell you that. Yes. And so it really is, in my opinion, a very different environment. So the average price-to-earnings ratio of the NASDAQ back in 2000 was 100 times plus. Today, it's 26 times. Mm-hmm. So it is, and the companies that were really the largest companies of the world back then were more traditional industry companies. And today, all five of the top five companies are listed on NASDAQ. So you've got kind of the much more established companies on NASDAQ, as well as a lot of big growers and innovators and disruptors. So I do think that it's a more varied group of companies. It's a much more well-established group at the top and some really interesting innovators. But they are all companies making revenue, you know, with established business models, making money, and coming out and tapping the public markets in a way to enable growth. And it's pretty exciting.
So, Adina, I look at your stock and I look at the company and I look at like high single digits earnings growth expected for the next couple of years, consensus expectations, mid single digits revenue growth. And you just talked about who sits on top of the highest market cap companies in the world, the way you're competing, the acquisitions you're making. Should investors think of this as a really stealthy, kind of cheap technology play? Or is it a fintech play? Or is it just in this bucket of, a pretty niche sort of thing, which is exchanges?
Yeah, we actually definitely see ourselves squarely in the fintech space. And so as an operator of the exchanges, we are a big technology operator ourselves, but then we also do sell technology software. Enterprise software is really our business, as well as data analytics. So I would say that we're a company that's squarely in a good space where growth, resiliency, as well as predictability is pretty good.
By the way, stock's up 31% in 12 months. So not only are a lot of good companies on, you yourself, the NASDAQ, have done well, to Dan's point. Something that we've talked about, I know Guy and I have talked about it here, is with dollar volumes of ETFs way surpassing the dollar volume trading of the actual equity market, do you see any risk to this explosion in Michael Burry, one of the guys, the short sellers for the Big Short and everything like that, he says he believes it's a passive bubble that is going to end in tears.
Yeah, and I think that we have to look at the fact that the public markets today still have a wide variety of participants. So you've got everyday retail, you've got very advanced retail, you've got the mutual fund world, the institutional investors, and you've got the types of vehicles that they can trade in or invest in are both the underlyings, the ETFs, options, and futures. So it's a very robust market environment, but the level of AUM that's coming into the ETFs and the passive funds are definitely, there's been a real trend there. The question is, do we continue to have the right balance of active and passive? And can we continue to make sure that there's the ability to arbitrage against any sort of what I would say, herd mentality that might exist, and making sure that people can express themselves in terms of having an opinion, like you guys do every day, about which stocks are really the right ones to get into, or which strategies are the right ones to get into, which funds are the right ones to get into. And so I personally believe that we're a very robust market.
We've got the safety levers in place.
Yeah, you've got a lot of levers in place just by the variety of the participation.
Real quick, I have one quick question. ESG is now the rage. Everybody talks about it. You guys and gals made an acquisition earlier this month. Can you speak about what you're doing to make sure, I guess, you're ESG friendly, for lack of a better phrase?
Yeah, well, NASDAQ itself, we have been working very hard to make sure that we're managing our carbon footprint. We're now net neutral, net carbon zero in terms of all of our costs as well as our employees' costs. But at the same time, we have a great opportunity to partner with our listed companies and companies all over the world to help them manage how do they report ESG, how do they do it efficiently, effectively, make sure investors really understand them. And that's what the acquisition was, is it's a great reporting tool. You report in your information once, we can propagate it out to all the metrics providers and the investors and make it so everyone understands how they're managing to changes and progressing in the ESG area.
Let me ask you, there's a lot of candidates talking about a transaction tax, and what would that do to your business? If, you know, would that really put pressure on trading?
Well, transaction taxes have been attempted in the past in Europe, so you can kind of look at the effect they had, and I would say that they weren't successful, and most of the country, actually all of the countries, have backed away from that because it did have an impact on liquidity and participation in the market. And so one of the great assets of our country are our capital markets and the robustness of our capital markets and the variety of participation, as we just talked about. So you want to make sure you maintain that and that you have an ability to have liquid access to capital all the time. And I do think a transaction tax, as we know, will put essentially some sort of barrier there. And our personal belief is that that's probably not the right place to put a burden on the taxpayers. I think that it would be, and you can look at some examples where they just hasn't been successful in the past.
When you read that the New York Stock Exchange was going to go after eBay, did you spit out your coffee, fall out of your chair? What did you think of that? Did you think what?
I actually didn't have that kind of reaction. I think that it's really interesting to think about different marketplaces. Now, we, NASDAQ, look at it as a technology provider. So how can we enable consumer marketplaces to be more efficient, to be able to make it so that they can create new market models, they can run auctions differently? NASDAQ, as a technology provider, could be a technology partner to a lot of different industry verticals, including consumer marketplaces. Now, what ICE wants to do to own eBay, that's a different proposition. You'd have to ask them.
You could buy stocks and use socks on the same exchange at the same time.
What could you?
You could
you
do
could.
That.
So what you
did
there.
Adina Friedman, CEO of the NASDAQ, president, stocks up 31% this year. Appreciate your time. And thanks for letting us, and apologize to all those people for us bothering them.
Every day.
Every
these
day.
Six,
they every love day. It. They love it. I can
never
tell you
had
that.
A crowd like this here, except for when Guy Adami brings in the Del Barton lacrosse team.
The randos on the street.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Again.
Thank
appreciate
you very
that.
Much. Thanks.
All right. Everybody can breathe a sigh of relief. It's fine. All right. Coming up, a new biggest bull on NVIDIA, and it has almost nothing to do with crypto. And speaking of seemingly unstoppable stocks, Tesla on a tear, but why today? What's new? Anything? By the way, you can always watch or listen to us live on the go from anywhere you might be on the CNBC app. If you haven't downloaded, Dan, download it today. We're back after this. All right, welcome back to Fast Money. There is a brand new NVIDIA biggest bull on the street. It is your call of the day. Bernstein slapping an outperform rating and a $360 target on NVIDIA, saying a crypto-free gaming profile and new graphics card product cycle can help push the stock even higher. That new price target, the highest on the street, it implies nearly 15% upside. So, Dan, Nathan, two questions. Is the chip rally just getting started? And if so, will or could NVIDIA lead the way?
15%, Sully. It could be there tomorrow. I mean, look at the way this stock is trading. So this is an analyst who's obviously been on the right side of this trade and is just kind of working his estimates up. You know, listen, there's a lot of things. Crypto is so 17, if you think about it. But from 2016 to its highs in 2018, NVIDIA rallied 1,000%. Then it got cut in half in 2018. Now it's up more than 100%, making new all-time highs. So, you know, this is one where I think investors have fairly short memories. And, you know, this is not one I think you want to buy on this sort of breakout here. You know, it's trading at a reasonable multiple. If you think AI, autonomy, gaming, all this stuff's going to hit in, and then maybe crypto, if Tom Lee is right and you have Bitcoin back at 20,000, this thing will be at 400.
Yeah, and you're right. And certainly we've seen NVIDIA be a poster child for momentum, especially in the chip space. But if you look at the fiscal Q4 they just put up in terms of data center, which was up 43%, was almost a $1 billion business. And the expectations for fiscal Q1 are that this is $1.1 billion, $1.2 billion. A bunch of upgrades came after that announcement. That explains it as much as anything in real time. So there's always been this gaming dynamic. There's been certainly these guys are in some of the high speed chips that certainly are higher margin chips, but their core business right now looks pretty good.
Anybody got an issue with the valuation?
It's rich, but, I mean, they're growing into it. Data center, to Tim's point, I mean, this was a $726 million quarter in the third quarter. They grew almost 40%. Yeah. In the fourth quarter, you're going to see continued growth in data center, which is decent margin business. So although valuation, yeah, you could say, oh, my God, it's rich, they seem to be growing into it quarter after quarter. So I'm with Dan. I mean, it's I don't think you pile into it here, but the stock, the trend continues to go
yeah,
higher.
I mean, Dan could be right. I mean, look at the chart. Is like
It's been a widow maker before, to be clear. This was a stock
that people blindly bought. It is going back to where it was, right? Bring a longer-term chart up.
But, you know, the bulls have staunchly stayed with it and defended on the grounds of some of this higher-margin business, and it certainly proved that.
Let me just add one thing. Remember yesterday morning when Apple missed? That was yesterday morning. I think NVIDIA was 285.
Karen, that was so yesterday.
I know. It's so yesterday.
All of our troubles seem so far away. All right. For more on today's call of the day, you can head over to our website at CNBC.com. Here's what else is coming up on Fast Money.
The big bounce in Bitcoin. Is the once volatile cryptocurrency's rally this year a turning point? We talked to one bull who says it's primed to go even higher. And later, a funny thing is happening in the options markets as markets are rocketing to new records. What's driving all the action, and how can you play it? We have some ideas. All that and more when Fast Money continues.
Is the Bitcoin bonanza back in play? The crypto dropping sharply in the last few minutes, but it is, let's not make too much of it. It's still up more than 30% this year and right around that 10,000 level. Your next guest says Bitcoin could maybe double or even triple so far this year. Let's bring in Mark Yusko of Morgan Creek Capital Management. He joins us from Raleigh, North Carolina, the RDU. Mark, it's good to have you on the program. Thanks very much.
No, thanks for having me, Brian.
Yeah. Listen, today it fell a little bit, but the reality is Bitcoin has been red hot. I mean, absolutely red hot, along with, by the way, a lot of the other cryptos. What makes you so optimistic? Because I think Tim called NVIDIA a widow maker before, that Bitcoin is able to continue to move higher in an extremely volatile market.
Yeah, look, I think the best thing about the Bitcoin market today is the fundamentals. The fundamentals continue to increase and improve. Adoption is growing. The number of wallets is up. The number of transactions is up. All the fundamentals really continue to get stronger. And we've also got the halving event that's coming up in May. And one of the things that does is that compresses supply. There won't be as many rewards every 10 minutes, every block. And so that'll put some decrease pressure on the sales from the miners. And prices usually adjust around those events. So we see a lot of upward momentum through the mid half of this year. And into the second half, you'll probably get to see a lot of the chasing that we saw back in 17, just like we're seeing the chasing in the stock market today.
Any idea why it's down 5% right now?
I couldn't tell you what happens minute by minute or even day to day. I just look at it over long periods of time. Like the last time I was on with the traders here, you know, it was 8,000. And they said, what should I do? I said, buy it. And then a year ago, I was on with Melissa, and it was around, you know, 3,200, 3,300. And she said, oh, isn't it going to continue to go down? I said, no, you should buy it. So if it's down 5% today, you should buy it now, buy it tomorrow, buy it every day. Stack your sats, build that portfolio, and then deposit some at one of our portfolio companies. I think was on with you guys a while ago, BlockFi, and get paid 8% interest on that Bitcoin. It's a good thing.
Mark, real quick, it's Guy, and thanks for coming on. Rates going lower across the globe, is that a bullish for Bitcoin or crypto in general? Is there any correlation whatsoever in your studies?
Oh, massively bullish. And look, Guy, I quoted you. I'm going to keep quoting you about in the world of rogue central bankers, Bitcoin is king. Look, interest rates around the world are all going to zero, all of them. U.S. rates are going to zero. Chinese rates are going to zero. They're all going to zero. And it's all because of demographics and deflation and too much debt. And in a world where your only choice, right, you can't pay back the debt, you can't default on the debt, so you got to inflate it away by devaluing your currency, the central bankers are going to print. That is massively bullish for Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is your opportunity to opt out of the fiat fiasco that's going on right now. And, Guy, you coined the term, and I'm going to keep talking about it.
Mark, it's Karen. Let me ask something. So clearly that's good, this, you know, fiat currency crisis, if we have one. But yeah. Is that the main underpinning of Bitcoin more than digital currency at this point?
Oh, really great question, Karen. you think about Bitcoin itself, today it's really a store of value. It's not designed to be an exchange-traded token like a Visa or MasterCard substitute. That's the Lightning Network, companies like Zap, a new investment we just made. That's going to take care of that second-order payments level for speed. Bitcoin is designed around security, most secure computer network in the world, most powerful computer network in the world. It is a perfect store of value. And if you follow the stock-to-flow model, you'll see that as the flow gets cut in half, again here on the halving, that stock-to-flow ratio improves better than gold, and it becomes the digital form of gold, that pure store of value, and is really designed to be that safe haven that we all use as part of a diversified portfolio.
Outside of that, Mark, we got to let you, but I want to read a tweet, and I want you to respond to it. This tweet is by a guy named Mark W. Yusko, okay? And I'm going to use a semi-bad word. I tell my five-year-old, don't use this word, the S word. It's not that one. All the raging equity bulls do realize that long bonds, the TLT, have outperformed stocks, the S&P 500, since valuations got to stupid, vile levels in January 2018, right? So, A, you think that stock markets must be dumb right now, and B, are you still bullish on bonds?
Oh, yeah. So two answers. Yes, I think stocks are still in Stupidville. I had to miss a typo there, although Stupid Vile works too.
Okay, well, Stupid Vile.
It was supposed to be Vile, but Vile works too, Brian. And they're so vile, just like in 2000, I think the future is going to be pretty ugly for stocks. And bonds, because we think rates are going to continue to go lower, TLT is another great hedge, along with something like DWSH to get fully hedged. If you had a portfolio of Bitcoin, TLT, DWSH, and a little bit of emerging market stocks like China A shares, you're going to be all good.
Okay, Mark W. Yusko. Mark, it's a real pleasure. Morgan Creek Capital from Raleigh, RDU. Thank you very much, Mark. We appreciate that.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay,
well,
whether it's Dan, Stupidville, or Stupid Vile, either way, I mean, Mark is saying, listen, I know you've recommended a bond ETF before on this, but recently.
And I have been for a year. I mean, I just agree with Mark. And, you know, whatever you want to get to, why central banks are accommodative, whether the Fed did it was a mid-cycle adjustment or whatever the heck it was, you just called it QE4. And now we're going to have global QE because of there's always going to be a reason right now. And I think he's right. You know, like look at what happened in our country over the last couple of years. We have exploding deficits. We have lower tax receipts. You know, where is the, you know, I don't know.
But what does Bitcoin do in a crashing stock market, which I'm not saying it's going to, but do you think a high-risk asset class is actually going to outperform in that environment? I don't. And I think it's something to think about. Everything that we've talked about tonight and on this show, which is why Bitcoin is rallying, I don't think you can take away. But if the sky is going to fall, and that's the reason they're buying it, mm-hmm. I'm not sure I want to own it when stocks are cascading lower.
Okay, good stuff there. Good discussion there, Mark. Thank you. Coming up, shares of Virgin Galactic have taken off this year, but is this move just way too much, too fast? Kind of the new hot traded stock up 25%. We'll talk about how you might want to trade it ahead of their numbers next week. But first, Dan and Tim are going trader versus trader over FedEx. Mm. Whose argument's going to come out the winner? We're going to find out coming up. All right, welcome back. Sometimes the best debates here in Fast Money take place off camera, in the commercial breaks or on conference calls or whatever. And that's exactly what went down this afternoon. We're talking about price action on FedEx, and all of a sudden realized there was like this big beef between Tim and Dan. So we decided to let two of our traders, who are good friends in real life, duke it out in a little trader versus trader. All right, in one corner of the plaza, for the mean streets of Scarsdale, New York, Tim, the Ambassador Seymour, known for stealing city bikes. On the other side, dangerous Dan Nathan. You know him as Mr. Risk Reversal, hailing from Syracuse, New York. When he's not hating on FedEx, apparently, he hates tomatoes. All right, guys, put on your gloves. Gentlemen, we're going to kick off this sort of first ever edition of Trader versus Trader. Tim, round one goes to you, the bullish take on FedEx.
Yeah, and we're not friends right now, let's be clear. I want a piece of Dan, so here we go. First, I want to just talk a little bit about the way markets are trading right now. First of all, we are seeing value plays, and I know, you know, FedEx is a valuation. If I want to make it a value, Dan will say it's a value trap, but it's certainly trading at a historical valuation trough. That's one part of this growth valuation trough on the other side. The more important here, what's the catalyst for FedEx? It's absolutely this integration of using Express to complete the final ground. That is a massive cost savings. You could make an argument this is now 10% of EPS if you look towards 2021, which is when you'll start to see this. People have been waiting for Fred Smith to wake up and actually begin to do this. There's other catalysts. Also, you're going to see less of an overhang from TNT. You're going to see jet fuel prices that are actually a benefit to them. The Amazon overhang channels and cycles out by the second half of 2021. Finally, I think Dan and I totally disagree on this, but if you look at this chart, I actually think FedEx, after a year and a half of essentially going through a base, but certainly for the last 9 months, somewhere around this 140 level, I actually think you've started to see the stock begin to take off here. Now, this is now finally above the 200-day right in here. It's been trading above the 200 moving day average for the first time, or for the longest time than it has in the last 9 months or so. I think the stock's actually breaking out.
Okay, Dan, you're the bear. Give us the case.
Well, here's
knock
the problem.
Him out.
Here's the problem. So Tim just said somewhere around the 140 level. Well, the stock is trading somewhere above the 160 level. So I think about this a little differently here. Here's a company that's had a whole host of problems over the last year and a half or so. They range from slowing global growth, a strong dollar, the trade war didn't really help them out. Some of those competitive issues that Tim sees as catalysts in a year, I see as a problem near term, and I see a problem for their earnings power. And I actually agree with Tim. I think that there's probably one more bad guide down. When they guided down in December, analysts took a slashing to 2020 and 2021. I think you have one more quarter like that. The other thing is about the competition. We know that that headline about Amazon pulling that last mile sort of stuff, the residential delivery is a problem for this company right now. The skew right now between business to business and residential is not working out for them, and I think there needs to be some restructuring. He said Fred Smith, finally, I love Fred Smith. He invented this industry. He'll get it right, but my whole point in the near term, and this is why I want to go to the technicals here, when they report next month, I think you're going to have another guide down. I think you're going to have another slash to guidance. And I look at this chart. I like to draw lines. Tim just likes to kind of eyeball things. That is one of the most well-defined downtrends. As my bank man Carter would say, to the penny, to the penny, to the penny. That's the one-year chart. Let's go to the five-year chart. There's your downtrend. Here's your support that he's talking about down there at 140. That's 12% away, people. And I see an air pocket down to 120. I think if you see a guide down, analysts cut those numbers, you see the stock down 10, 15%, that's when you buy it.
All right. Good cases on bull. Head back to your corners. We got some questions.
Oh,
Aaron, you got a question for Dan.
I got a question for Dan. Yeah, so you talk about weak competition in your earlier slides. What do you think of UPS is going to face the same chart as the same potential downside as FedEx?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You saw it, Karen, last month on January 30th. I mean, UPS just cratered when they offered some disappointing results and guidance. So right now, I think they're facing some of the same competitive disadvantages they happen to do with their battling each other. They're battling Amazon. They're battling a really weird trade and global growth situation right now. So I think UPS, again, it's a cheap stock, trades well below market multiple, trades below FedEx right here. I suspect that there's another hit to their earnings in 2020.
Yeah, and Tim, my concern would be margins. I mean, FedEx Express is more than half their revenues, but margins, operating margins below 4%. Ground, which is, I think $5 billion in revenues. Margins were 6.5%. The street was looking for 10%. Margins are going the wrong way. Do you think they could stem the tide?
That's the whole reason they're making this move. This move from into ground and using that express kind of business to complete the final mile through ground is going to save these guys, as I said, probably 10% on earnings. And again, it's funny because Dan's drawing this chart, and I'll do the same thing. You can draw a chart and you can make it do anything you want. My chart goes to here, and we've actually broken up after, in fact, consolidating right at resistance. To me, this is not necessarily a valuation call. This is absolutely a stock that now has catalysts. And I would argue people see that, what's that, the blue and the gold dress. Everybody saw something completely different. This is a gold dress.
I know what
dancing in a blue dress. And I can tell you right now, this is a chart that actually, to me, is a good chart. Mm.
The dress is blue and black. We all know that. All right. So who has the knockout trade? They both made strong cases on FedEx. We want you to vote now in our Twitter poll at CNBC Fast Money. We're going to reveal the champ later on the show again at CNBC Fast Money. Coming up, looking to risk less and make more? Of course you are. But there's been a massive surge in options trading. We're going to show you exactly how to play it. Plus, the street is loving this space stock. Can it really continue to rally? Virgin Galactic discussion coming up. All right, welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks are soaring to new all-time highs. What's new? But there is another huge rally sort of hiding a little bit under the radar, and it's happening in the options market. Trading activity has just boomed. In fact, options volumes at their highest levels in at least 14 years. So if you're wondering how you can use options to make a play in this record run, well, you're in luck. Options play chief strategist Tony Zhang is over at the Plasma to teach you how it's done. Tony.
So thanks, Brian. Let's take a look at the markets from a bit of a bipolar view, which I think reflects a lot of the sentiment that we currently see in the market. So, and we want to see why options are a smart way to play this current market. So first of all, we see that markets are at full valuation, which means that it's hard to make a case to go long equities from a cheapness perspective. Also, from a technical perspective, we're near overbought conditions, so the risk-reward metrics to go long equities doesn't look very good. But because of FOMO, fear of missing out, and how strong the equity markets have been performing, we still want to maintain upside exposure, but find a way to do so with limited risk. And this is really where options shine. So taking a look at this, what I was looking at earlier today was looking at SPY. I was looking out to the April 3rd expiration, which expired right after this quarter. And I was looking at the 338 calls, the at-the-money calls. These were trading at $5.70 earlier today. This allows me to gain upside exposure in SPY with a break-even price of $343.70, only about a 1.5% move to the upside to make money on this particular trade. But to understand this, what I'm really risking is only 1.7% of the underlying stock price, no matter what happens, even if the stock drops. So now let's take a look at this on the flip side. Because of all the reasons I just laid out, there's a concern, there's a high risk of a pullback. So if you see a concern of a pullback of anywhere from 3 to 5% or lower, whether this is because of fears of coronavirus or shares like Apple guiding lower, and you do not want to move your assets into cash, one of the ways that you can protect your portfolio is by using put options. So earlier today, what I was looking at is going out to the April 17th expiration, a little further out in time, and buying the 339 puts. The at-the-money puts were trading at around $6.80. This allows me to take advantage of a move to the downside of about 2% to the downside. So if markets move 2% lower, I protect my portfolio. And if markets continue moving higher, I'm only risking 2% to protect my portfolio. So this is a great way to utilize options to trade either view in the markets.
All right, Tony Zhang. Tony, thank you very much. Dan, quickly, I mean, you can comment on that as well, but what to make of this massive boom in options volume?
Guys, smooth as ice, obviously. I think it's really interesting the way he framed it. To the upside, you can reach 1.7% of the underlying for all that upside exposure. And the flip side is you can hedge your portfolio for about 2% or whatever it is, you know, looking out 2 months or so. So to me, it kind of touches on what Karen said before. Fix at 14.5. It should be around 12. Over the last year, when we've been at new highs, it's been at 12. I think there is a little trepidation about the rally, and I think that Tony laid it out perfectly. Choose your own adventure. Whatever you want to do, options are cheap right now.
Okay, good stuff there. Tony, thank you. Dan, thank you. For more options action, as always, you can tune into the full show every Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Coming up, we're going to do more on the hottest stock anywhere, Virgin Galactic. And later on, the latest CNBC special on the coronavirus outbreak tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern time. We'll bring you all you need to know. We're back after this. There's a new top bull on Tesla. We could probably do this segment every day. Piper Sandler, which is the new name of the research firm, upping its price target on the stock to $9.28, oddly specific. That is now the highest on Wall Street. The analyst behind the note says Tesla's, quote, superior products, the potential for solar power charging capabilities are just a couple of reasons for the call. Shares of Tesla at another record close. They are up big. Oh, look at that, 6.8%, up more than 117% so far this year. Let's talk more about this guy, Dami. I thought this call was really interesting because the analyst actually laid out like a house in Minneapolis with a solar roof and a battery pack in the house plugged into their Tesla. It was one of the first calls where they talked about the whole sort of vertical ecosystem.
And that's been Brian Kelly's point. You know, years ago, Brian Kelly said Tesla's one of those stocks you put in your drawer and you forget about it. And he's been correct. Now, obviously, there have been ups and downs in this thing, but recently he's been spot on. I don't know how to value this clearly. This is one that I have not been on for the last $600 or so. But when you start seeing analysts, to Tim's point, I think last night or two nights ago, now they're starting to chase. Now they're having to start to give you the high side bull thesis, and maybe it's getting a little frothy on that front. With that said, I have zero idea how to trade the stock at $917 a share.
All right, let's move on because Tesla is still a rage, but it was sort of all the rage. But now there's one stock, especially among small retail investors, that is giving Tesla's rally a run for the money, and that is Virgin Galactic. That stock rising again today, 23%, extending its meteoric rise. More investors getting bullish on the race to outer space or just want to trade the name. And Main Street is loving it. Let's get now to Kate Rooney out in San Francisco with more on how the retail investor is really getting involved here.
That's right. Hey, Brian, Virgin Galactic was the top traded stock at a few different retail platforms this week. Let's look at Fidelity first. According to the firm, Virgin Galactic was the most popular stock for Fidelity customers. It outpaced fellow retail favorites Tesla and Apple. The same goes for SoFi traders. Yesterday, Virgin Galactic saw by far its largest trading volume ever on SoFi Invest. That was 14 times the historical average and more than double the previous biggest day for the space company. It's a relatively smaller platform, but it gives us a sample size of what millennials are actually buying. The majority of those SoFi traders are ages 25 to 40. And finally, TD Ameritrade. According to TD's Investor Movement Index, Virgin Galactic was among the top names bought in January. They're continuing to see clients buying in February, but not quite at those same levels. Virgin Galactic has only been trading publicly since October, and they're not expected to turn a profit this year. But that's not holding people back, Brian. This week's trading volume was nearly 10 times the daily average volume. Back to you.
Pretty amazing stuff. Kate Rooney, thank you very much. It's, by the way, the company's based at 166 North Roadrunner Parkway in a Suite 1C in Las Cruces, New Mexico. It has exactly $0 in revenue, effectively. Yeah. But anybody got an
answer? The Roadrunner image is, of course, interesting that, you know, the Roadrunner.
When you go out, right, off the edge of the cliff and then you kind of.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, does anybody. Are people buying it for a real reason? Or are they buying it because other
it's
people
thematic.
Because it's a moonshot. What are the ways that you can play in the public markets? Think about the way this thing came to the public markets. Credit Suisse brought this deal as a SPAC. Chamath Palihapitiya, pretty good investor, is the one who got behind this thing, made this deal happen. Our friend Adam Bain, we know from Twitter, is on the board. They have a great team. George White says, I'm just saying that, yeah, there's no sales. Someday they're going to take people to space or whatever. It's one of the only ways you can play it in the public markets. It's just that simple. So we're in a mania sort of market. You know, Tesla has a market cap that's double GM and Ford combined. Double them. Okay? It used to
but
be
are
we were
you
talking
saying to get, all right, that this, that.
Who knows? I don't know. Space anywhere, may be right. An amazing thing, and it's probably.
The final frontier.
It may be a multi-trillion dollar business, and if you could have gotten in 2019 or 20.
And it may not even be space. It may actually be their ability to move people faster, some other part of this, you know, this world, the one we're in. but when you look at valuations right now, and there's probably a lot of okay boomers going on TV sets around the country right now. But look, companies have to ultimately make money. And buying thematically when money's free seems really, really nice. But that's what this is. And I think this is a play. It's not a moonshot. Hey, I can make 200% like it has. It's 160% this year. It's literally, hey, I want to buy into something I believe in. And that's just great. But that's, you know, that's not how you invest.
For another day.
Yeah, another day.
Okay.
All right, I broadcasted here from in 1999. I'm just saying, I'm not comparing this to 1999, but I am comparing sort of the idea that these stocks are changing every couple of weeks and they're going up 200 and 300%, you know, and we're talking about them again.
And the whole float trades.
Okay.
By the way, we have a big interview coming your way next week. It's the guy that Dan just referenced. Chamath Palihapitiya is going to join the gang on Squawk Box. Mm. He's the founder of Social Capital. He's also, chairman of Virgin Galactic?
Correct.
So I don't know if he gets a South Roadrunner Parkway ever very much. We're going to ask Chamath about space travel. All right, coming up, we're going to reveal who you think has the knockout trade on FedEx. There's still time to vote. Tim on the bull, Dan on the bear, at CBC Fast Money. We're back after that. Dan crushed it.
Wow.
Wins the poll, the bear case on FedEx. Dan. Takes it. We'll do another one of these, guys. Good job.
Good
all
times.
Right. Final trades. Tim Seymour?
Well, I still have to choose FedEx.
Okay. Karen?
Home Builders, XHB.
Dan?
TLT, buy on dips.
Great show tonight. Adina Friedman, Dollar Jen, Brian.
Thank you, Guy. Appreciate it. See you tomorrow. Mad with Jim starts right now.